Let's have a quick break to talk about those wonderful people at Happy Mammoth. You'll have heard me talking previously about Hormone Harmony, the supplement that helps women maintain optimal hormone levels. With over 50,000 glowing reviews from women worldwide, and 98% saying they'd recommend it to friends and family. Well, now you can take those results even further by pairing it with their prebiotic collagen protein, which helps restore gut lining integrity, promoting overall hormonal balance. It helps to relieve occasional bloating or gas, reduce sugar cravings, and help you feel satisfied longer. It helps support healthy, sustainable weight management, boost energy, and help stabilize mood swings. Because your gut directly affects your hormones, improving your gut health can amplify your hormone harmony results, so you can feel like yourself again. A friend of mine was struggling with occasional digestive issues and brain fog, and since adding prebiotic collagen protein, she's noticed a real lift in her energy and overall well-being. Happy Mammoth is dedicated to making women's lives easier, and that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. And right now, you can try prebiotic collagen protein and Hormone Harmony risk-free and get 15% off your entire first order with code DARKPARANORMAL at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use code DARKPARANORMAL for 15% off today. Personally, I can find it really hard to focus, and as a non-drinker, I can also find it tricky to try and wind down. And how you go about finding your personal vibe is your individual choice. Do you know there's a 100% American farm-grown online cannabis company that ship federally legal THC direct to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients so they can target nearly every mood and health concern you can think of. I'm talking about Mood.com's incredible line of functional gummies. And our listeners get 20% off their first order at Mood.com with the promo code DARKPARANORMAL. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that just get you high. Mood gummies are optimized so it can take as little as 15 minutes to take you to the mood you desire. Like the Mind Magic gummies for creativity and focus. Or PMS support to ease cramps and balance mood swings. And there's a plethora of other gummies for you to find your perfect mood. These days we all know gummies just to get high can be bought from just about anywhere. But Mood have changed the game by combining premium federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get in the perfect mood in as little as 15 minutes with no dispensary lines or no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered discreetly to your door. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, as mentioned, our listeners can get 20% off their first order by entering the promo code DARKPARANORMAL. So go to Mood.com and find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for and let Mood find your perfect mood. And don't forget to enter the promo code DARKPARANORMAL for 20% off.
Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal, Season 22.
Hello, everyone, and finally, welcome back to both Halloween and the start of Season 22 of The Dark Paranormal. Yes, we are now in the growth phase of this entire community, experiment, wonderful situation that I never thought I'd be privileged enough to be the host of. And that is 100% down to you wonderful people. And I thank each and every one of you for subscribing, for sharing the show, becoming Patreons, or even leaving a nice comment. You have made this show. You are the Dark Paranormal. And those words are easy for podcasters to say. I like to think I show evidence of those words, i.e., you guys told me you didn't like the long introductions, so from now on, we do not read out Patreons' names, not as a disservice to the Patreons, but as a service to everyone who wants to get to the crux of the story. Secondly, some of you did mention the sound quality last season wasn't up to scratch. We have invested heavily in some new recording equipment. Hopefully that shows. And from a Patreon perspective, our Patreons have asked for different things such as an actual forum to discuss ideas and theories, and potentially new shows from me for Patreons to discuss my ideas about what we've covered that week. Now, this will be arguably the longest intro of the entire season,
but still shorter than your average one, because we're not reading Patreon names. However, now is the time to sign up to Patreon. We've amended the tiers. There's a slight price increase for the simple reason our prices have remained the same since 2020. Regardless of inflation, regardless of the fact that my costs keep going up, but I want to do and always have wanted to do my best by my listeners and absorb the costs as best I could. Apple's move last year to remove 30% from anybody who purchased a subscription to Patreon via their app and take that money away from creators left a divot, and we were sent an email by Patreon as a creator to either raise our prices or take it on the chin. And I absorbed those costs for about 10 months of last year. But we've reached a point where the prices do need to increase. However, unlike the likes of Spotify, Netflix, etc., who between those 5 years have raised prices on average between 35 and 40%, we're raising them between 20 and 25%. Because the last thing on earth I would genuinely, sincerely want to do is to put people out of pocket who support what we're doing here. So therefore, the prices were three tiers, £2, which was just a support of the show, £3 got you early ad-free access, and £5 got you access to everything early, ad-free, and Dark Bites, a weekly Patreon-only podcast. Now, it will be £3, but that £3 will give you ad-free access, released on the day of the normal episode, just without ads. £4 gives you no ads and early access to all of the episodes on the main feed. And £6 will get you everything on the main feed, early, ad-free, as well as Dark Bites for Patreons only, and also a new show where I will give my own theories and ideas on what we've discussed that week, and also, coming mid-November, an idea around a forum or community just for that tier of Patreons to discuss their ideas in line with mine, which I will be participant in too. We can discuss, we can bring those ideas onto the new show to discuss. So it's 98% done. That change will take place mid-November. So between now and mid-November, the prices currently are lower. And you also get a free week at the highest tier if you head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal or simply click the link in the show notes below. Nobody likes price increases for anything, but 5 years without one is now starting to become detrimental. And on the plus side, by the way it appears I do things, there wouldn't be another price rise for 5 more years. Plus, I was very conscious we are now entering the Christmas quarter period. So in terms of podcast ads, they're going to come thick and fast. Now, any podcaster will tell you that can't be helped in order to sustain some sort of side income to support the show. That's why we've upped the tier slightly from just a supporter to something where you can pay a minimal amount each month and receive an ad-free variant of the show on the day of its standard release. And it works out around 75p a week to get ad-free episodes of The Dark Paranormal, Minisodes, and Dark Realms. And believe me, I'm in the same boat of thinking, but I'm not paying for no adverts, I'll just skip through them. That's fine. But what I'm saying is, if you do want to pay for them, believe me, I know I am going to spend more on takeout coffees in the next 2 days than I would on a week subscription. And the final change I want to make you all aware of is Dark Realms is no longer just going to be about places. We are now going to start incorporating legends, such as banshees, such as duendes, as Anna mentioned in our interview. Because the one thing I don't ever want to do in this world of the paranormal that we're trying to investigate through stories and exchanges is to cut myself off from the ability to talk about other things within the paranormal realm. So Dark Realms has expanded its purview, so to speak. And who would have thought the debut episode of this season would begin with a last, because I can guarantee you this is the last over 4.5 minute intro you're ever going to hear. But there was some important information in there. And I will leave a link in the show notes to explain when the experience begins, which, coincidentally, is right now. So it always feels like it's been forever when I say these words, and there is literally no better day in the calendar year to say them than right now. Please, lower the lights. Make yourself comfortable, and most importantly, leave your disbelief at the door as we hear all about the arrival from the darkest depths. Hi, I've been listening to your show for around 3 years now, ever since a friend of mine recommended it. Now, I'm not writing to criticize, but I have noticed a pattern in the stories you cover. When things get resolved, it seems almost always through some sort of religious intervention, priests, blessings, cleansings, that sort of thing. But I wanted to share my own experience, because that ended differently. And in all honesty, that difference is what still keeps me up some nights. And I was an ardent skeptic. This all happened about 10 years ago, and yes, I've changed my name, my friend's name, and the location, but only slightly. Anyway, I'm a marine biologist. I was working towards my PhD at the time, and I'd been offered a 12-month research placement at a very remote station on the Scottish coast. Well, I accepted immediately. The project focused on cold water marine ecosystems, and this location was perfect for sample collection. The station itself was an old Royal Navy repair facility from the early 1900s. It was built in a spot where the cliff curved inwards. It created a natural shelter from the wind, the rain, the harsh Scottish elements. But the Navy had abandoned it decades ago, and the university had converted the building that was there as a research unit, with some living quarters above. It was a two-story building. The ground floor held storage, equipment, and a small dock for experiments of a small scale. And as I say, the upper floor was converted into a small living quarters and a workspace. Basically a large living room divided into a kitchenette, desk area, and sleeping quarters. The more I stayed there, the more it felt more like I was living in someone else's house than a real research facility. But it was functional. The location made up for the outdated setup. The cliff protection meant we could work when the rest of the coastline was being battered by gale force winds. As I mentioned earlier, I've always been a skeptic. I'm a self-confessed nerd. I read about seahorse reproduction, the fact that males carry the young, long before I ever saw one in person. And when I did, I found it absolutely fascinating. As strange as it sounds, it felt like this small animal in an aquarium shared a lot of my views at the time about the world, and I know how ridiculous that sounds. But when I finally saw a seahorse, I was struck by how majestic they were, despite being so small and fragile. And it was right there and then I knew I wanted to spend my life studying the ocean. I'm telling you all this because I want you to understand. I am not someone who jumps to the supernatural explanation. I explain things away for months. For the first 8 months, the placement was exactly what I'd hoped for. I shared the station with another researcher, Simon, who would come in 3 days a week. Occasionally, there'd be other students who would stay for a few days to gather specific samples, but mostly it was just Simon and I. The work was demanding but rewarding. I kept detailed journals, both for my research and my personal observations. I've always found writing helps me process things. What I now know as oddities started small. Doors that I was certain I'd closed would be open when I'd returned to a room. At first, I just thought it was Simon. But it would happen on days when I was alone. Then, I'd start to notice equipment moving slightly. Nothing really dramatic. Maybe a clipboard in a different spot. A container with samples rotated on the shelf. I just told myself I was misremembering. A lot of these days were harsh Scottish weather. Convincing yourself you placed something back in the wrong way was very easy to believe. So I just told myself I was misremembering things. The wet footprints, on the other hand, were harder to dismiss, especially on dry days. I'd find them going up the metal stairs leading to the upper floor. They looked like someone had walked up from the dock area with soaked boots, but the dock was completely dry. I convinced myself it was condensation, even though I knew that didn't make sense. It was the radio that was the first thing that genuinely unsettled me. We kept on in the main work area for weather updates and safety checks. Sometimes, late at night, laying alone, I'd hear it crackle to life, even though I was convinced it was switched off. One night, I could have sworn I heard someone giving coordinates in an old-fashioned accent, very clipped and formal. I checked the radio the next morning, and it was off, unplugged even. I decided I must have been half asleep. Around month 6, I mentioned some of this to Simon. Not all of it. I didn't want to sound like a lunatic. Just the doors and the footprints. He grinned and said something like, "Oh yeah, this place definitely has a vibe." Well, of course, I asked what he meant. He said he'd felt watched sometimes, especially working near the dock. Then he shrugged it off and said old buildings are just like this. Maybe a week or so later, I'm telling Simon about another incident. I'd once again heard footsteps on the metal stairs the very night before, but when I checked, no one was there. I really liked Simon, but he could look condescending whether he intended to or not. And he smiled, nodding, listening to my story as if to say, "I told you there was a strange vibe." We then moved on to other chat, and as I walked away from the work area, I turned to walk towards the kitchenette. And out of nowhere, I was yanked backwards and pulled down to the floor in one smooth motion. My heart stopped. And then I heard Simon laughing. He'd crept up behind me, grabbed me as a joke. "Ha! For a minute you thought it was the other side, didn't you? Be honest." I laughed from the floor and forced a nod and reached out my hand, my shaking hand, and Simon helped me up. That sensation of being grabbed had been so visceral, so unexpected, it shook me to my core. Simon could see I was shaken, and he apologized. He said he didn't mean to scare me that badly, and we moved on. But I kept thinking about how I felt. That pressure of hands on my shoulders, the way I'd been pulled down with surprising strength. Simon was maybe my build. By month 9, the placement had shifted. Simon's schedule changed, and he could only come by once a week. Other students had finished their projects, and I was alone most of the time, which is when things escalated. I would start seeing reflections. The first time, I was examining a water sample under the microscope. The sample was fine, but when I glanced up at the window beside my desk, I saw a figure stood behind me. Only there for a split second, but a dark shape, a dark, human-sized shape. Wearing, and yes, I know how this sounds, an old diving suit. I spun around instantly, but it's interesting how your brain can work through a number of scenarios within that split second, and I'd settled on the idea Simon was playing another prank. But there was no one there. The room was empty. It happened again a few days later. I'm washing equipment at the sink, and I look at the kitchen window, and reflected in the window above the sink, it's the same diving suit, the same posture, standing completely still, facing away from me. This time I did not turn around immediately. I watched the reflection. I was trying to study it to get some detail, to make sense of it. I blinked and it was gone. I convinced myself by this point it was probably exhaustion. I had been working for hours, long hours, sometimes 16-hour days. The isolation was now clearly getting to me. Those footsteps on the metal stairs became a nightly occurrence. I'd be laying in bed, and I'd hear them slow, deliberate steps on the metal, moving from the ground floor to the upper level, my level. Each step had a distinctive metal ring. I'd get up, turn on the light, check the entire building. Never anyone or anything. The dock area was also completely empty. All the doors were locked from inside the house. One afternoon, Simon came by for his weekly check-in, and I debated whether to tell him about the figure, but I decided against it. Instead, I asked if anyone he knew had ever mentioned anything strange about the station. He thought for a moment and said, "Well, old Dave mentioned something once." Dave was one of our senior researchers. He'd been with the university for decades. Simon said Dave had told him about the station, that, and I quote, "it had its moods, and that you just had to learn to live with it." Of course, I pressed for more detail, but Simon didn't have any. He said Dave had seemed purposely vague, almost as if he didn't want to talk about it. By month 11, I'd seen this figure at least 10 times. Always in reflections, windows, the surface of water samples, even the screen of my laptop just as I turned it off. The figure always wore the same thing, this vintage diving suit. We all know the kind with the bulky circular helmet and a window in the front. A very heavy item. It never moved towards me. It would just stand there, facing away, like it was waiting for something or someone. My dreams started around the same time. I'd dream I was underwater. I was struggling to breathe. My lungs were burning. I'd look down and see I was wearing the diving suit. I'd quickly try to remove the helmet, but my hands just wouldn't cooperate. The water was pitch black, pressing in from all sides. Sometimes I'd see shapes move in the darkness, other figures in diving suits, drifting past me like they were suspended in time. I'd wake up, gasping, drenched in sweat, my chest tight. By the time month 12 began, Simon's visits had stopped entirely. He'd been reassigned to another university project, and I was completely alone for those final 4 weeks. The very first night, I heard crying. I was almost asleep. It was faint, a low, distant sound that could have been anything. The wind had picked up that evening, stronger than I could remember, and I convinced myself that's what it was. Wind blowing through some gap in the building structure, which had never been hit by this wind before, creating an unusual tone. I'd never heard it before, but old buildings make strange noises, as we all know, so I turned over and fell asleep. The very next night, I heard it again. This time, clearer, more distinct, rising and falling in a way that didn't quite match any wind, plus the wind had now laid down. I lay there in the dark, listening. My mind started to wander to irrational places. Irrational places I really couldn't afford to go. I initially thought, could it be connected to the figure in the diving suit? Maybe he lived here. Maybe he had a family when it was a Navy facility. Am I hearing the wife of a diver who's just found out he's dead? I know that sounds absurd, but the building was empty, I was alone and scared. But that sound was so human, so filled with grief. I got out of bed and checked the windows. The wind was blowing, but not as strongly as before. I went back to bed determined to rationalize it. Maybe it was an animal. I wasn't sure what kind. A shrew, maybe. I didn't even know if a shrew was native to this area, and I'd certainly never heard the noise a shrew makes. But that was much easier to believe than my other alternative.
You know, this holiday season, comfort isn't about finding more hustle, it's about slowing down, finding calm amidst the chaos, and creating a home that truly restores you. And that's where Avocado Green Mattress comes in, because you can create your own natural holiday oasis, because Avocado transforms your home into a peaceful grounding retreat with their products made with certified organic and sustainably sourced materials. From breathable bedding to handcrafted mattresses, Avocado is all about true comfort, so you can rest, recharge, and wake up refreshed all season long. Every Avocado product is thoughtfully made with the planet and you in mind, and you can feel good about the comfort and quality that you're bringing into your home. And there are easy financing options with Affirm to make your purchase more accessible. Prioritize rest and recharge with Avocado's organic comfort. Head to avocadogreenmattress.com today to create your natural oasis and save big during their holiday sale. Avocado, dream of better. Today's episode of The Dark Paranormal is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it. So your dollar goes a long way. Visit progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Companies and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary, not available in all states or situations. The holidays sneak up fast, but it's not too early to get your shopping done and actually have fun with it. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful, with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. We've all scoured the web for last-minute, passable gifts, but you rarely find something unique. Gifts worth a thought is as appreciated as the gift. But you will at uncommongoods.com. Often handmade or made in the US, many crafted by independent artists or small businesses. Made in small batches or very rare one-offs that don't break the bank, though the best finds can sell out fast. It's our second year working with Uncommon Goods, and last year I bought a delicate blown glass sphere in an almost spectral green, and since then it's become a legit conversation piece for anyone coming into my home. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone. Mums, dads, kids, book lovers, football fans, gardeners, you name it, you'll find thousands of new gift ideas you won't find anywhere else. The phrase, the gift that keeps on giving, is rarely true, but with Uncommon Goods, every purchase you make, they give $1 to a non-profit partner of your choice, donating more than $3 million to date. So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off that list. To get your 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/darkparanormal. That's uncommongoods.com/darkparanormal for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
By the third consecutive night, there was now no mistaking it. This was clearly a woman crying. It was late evening, maybe 9 or 10 p.m. I was at my desk typing notes when the sound started. Low at first, growing ever louder gradually. It was coming from downstairs. This crying was raw, filled with an anguish that made my stomach turn. I sat very still, hardly breathing, just listening. Every last rational part of my brain was screaming at me to stay where I was, to ignore it, to wait until the morning. But I couldn't. I needed to know. I grabbed the torch by my bed and went to the door that led to the stairs. My hand was shaking as I opened it. The crying was louder now, echoing off the concrete walls of the storage area below. I descended the metal stairs very slowly, very light-footedly. The sound seemed to be coming from the far corner, near the old dock entrance. However, as the light switch for downstairs was downstairs, I needed my torchlight to navigate the stairs. But as soon as my first foot hit the floor, I shone the torch immediately into that corner. Equipment crates, shelves of supplies, coils of rope, everything exactly how it should be. But the crying continued. I followed it, moving past the crate towards the back wall. The sound now seemed to be coming from behind a stack of equipment, near the corner where the building met the cliff face. I stood there, shining my torch into the shadows, my heart pounding so hard I could feel it in my throat. When I felt it, hands grabbed me from behind, the same grip as before, firm, insistent, undeniable. I was yanked backwards and pulled down to the floor in one smooth, powerful motion. Exactly the same when Simon had done it months before. The same pressure, the same force. I hit the ground hard, the torch flying from my hand and skittering across the concrete. I hope to God this was Simon, because that would mean I wasn't alone and there was a logical reason. The light spun wildly, casting shadows across the wall. I scrambled to my feet, grabbed the torch, and spun around. I shone it in every direction. No Simon. The storage area was completely empty. The crying had stopped. The only sound I could hear was my own ragged breathing and the wave subtly crashing against the shore outside. I didn't walk upstairs, I ran. I took the metal stairs two at a time and I burst through the door to the upper level. I'd locked it behind me and I shoved my desk under the handle for good measure. I dursn't go back downstairs until the sun was up. After that night, the figure became an almost daily appearance. It would appear at the shoreline at dusk. I'd attempt to take photos of it. It would never appear in any photos. Stood at the water's edge, waves breaking around its feet. It even began appearing in my windows at night, always in that same diving suit, always facing away. Once in the early hours of the morning, I just couldn't sleep. I watched the clock go from midnight to 1, 2, 3. And even I, being a skeptic, have read enough horror stories to know 3 a.m.'s allegedly the witching hour. But everything did feel wrong. And that's when I saw it. It didn't materialize like you hear. It came on after a blink. Not there one moment, there the very second after. Just standing there, motionless, facing me, not turned away. I couldn't move, I couldn't speak. I couldn't even close my eyes. I just stared at it. My entire body was rigid with fear. And then it slowly faded like mist burning in the sunlight. The dreams became more frequent and more vivid. I was always underwater, always struggling. Sometimes I'd see that figure swimming ahead of me, beckoning me to follow. Other times I'd look up to see the surface far above, impossibly far. And I'd know I'd never reach it. But the worst part was when it finally turned around. I'd been walking back from collecting samples one afternoon, ready to wrap up my assignment. It was late in the day, the light was already fading, and I saw the figure stood near the dock, at the water's edge. As usual, it was facing away from me, looking out at the sea. I'd seen that so many times by now, I was almost numb to it. Almost. But this time, I chose to approach. And it slowly turned. I stopped walking. I dropped my samples. I couldn't breathe. The figure was now facing me, fully visible. And through the helmet's faceplate, I could see its face. All. What should have been its face, because it was pale, distorted, the features blurred as if seen through murky water, but the expression was clear and seared into my brain. It was sad, desperate. The mouth was moving, and I could tell it was pleading with me, trying to communicate something, something I could never understand. The mouth moved, but no sound came. We both stood there for what felt like minutes, but was probably seconds. Then it just disappeared. The shoreline was empty. The waves rolled in, taking some of my samples with them, as if nothing had happened. A week later, my placement was finished. I didn't tell a soul what had taken place. I packed my things, I got ready my research, and I left. I drove away from that station and never looked back, convincing myself distance would end it. It didn't. Back at my flat in England, things continued. I would see that same figure in a diving suit, now in my garden. Usually when it was raining, through a rain-streaked windows, but undoubtedly him. One morning, I walked into my bathroom to find the mirror completely fogged with condensation, although I hadn't showered. And in the fog, someone had wrote H-E-L, and as if the start of a P before they were interrupted by me. I found photos on my laptop that I didn't remember taking. Images of the station. Images of me working, when I was the only one there. Starting to get freaked out, I rearranged my entire flat. I moved furniture away from windows, I took down every mirror except the one in the bathroom, and I covered that with a towel when I went to bed. I stopped taking baths, because I couldn't stand looking at water. Showers became seconds long. Even washing dishes became an ordeal, because I'd either have the sink reflecting back an image or the window. My sleep was decimated. I'd lay awake for hours, listening for footsteps, for crying, for anything. And if or when I did sleep, the dreams came. Always underwater, always drowning. Finally, I'd had enough, and I sought help. Not from a priest, from a therapist. I was terrified she'd think I was losing my mind and put me somewhere safe for my own protection. Instead, she just listened. She didn't dismiss my experiences. She acknowledged that what I'd felt was real. The fear, the isolation, the terror. But she also gave me frameworks to understand it. She explained how extreme isolation will affect the brain. How it can create sensory experiences that feel completely real. She mentioned how the brain, especially when sleep-deprived and isolated, will sometimes create explanations for things it can't process. We talked about Simon's prank, and how that physical sensation, being grabbed and pulled down, had created a kind of template in my mind. How, in a moment of extreme stress and fear, my mind might have recreated that sensation as a way to process the terror I felt. It made sense. It was rational. I had something to hold on to. Within around a month, everything at my flat stopped. But here's the thing. I don't know if therapy banished it, or if it was never really there at all. If a mental health professional can make a ghost disappear, was it ever a ghost? Or was it all in my mind? Fractured by isolation and stress, creating something to explain the unexplainable. I've not bothered trying to research the station's history about said diver, simply because I'm feeding into the narrative I don't want to feed into. Do not get me wrong, a decade later and I still don't have answers. I know what happened and I believe what I experienced. The fear was real. The figure felt real. The sensation of being grabbed was as physical as anything I've ever felt. But I also can't ignore the fact that therapy, not exorcism, ended it. I was alone in a barren, isolated place for months on end. Maybe that's all the explanation I need. But sometimes, late at night, I do have to be honest and I wonder. If it was all in my head, why did it stop so completely once I talked about it? And if it wasn't in my head, where did it go? I thought it important to share this with your show, because I think it's important to acknowledge that not every strange experience ends with holy water and prayers. Sometimes, as in my case, it ends with a therapist helping you understand your mind. But that doesn't make my experience less valid, and it doesn't mean I'm entirely convinced it was all in my head. For example, I still avoid long mirrors. I still feel uneasy near large bodies of water at dusk. And sometimes, I catch myself looking for that figure in reflections. Thanks for reading this, Kevin, and giving a place for people like me to send in our experiences. Anonymous. Well, Anonymous, thank you so much for submitting your experience, and we chose it for our debut simply as it reads, even from your skeptical point of view, as one of the most truthful emails in terms of your thought process that we've ever had. I genuinely have nothing but admiration for people who are willing to put their own belief systems up for debate. And at the same time, even coming from a believer such as myself, I fully understand the human need to continue living life on a normal level. Our Patreons know this, and I believe I've mentioned it on this show too, but very quickly. In an apartment or flat, as we say in the UK, that me and my ex-partner used to live in, I was convinced it was haunted, she was not so convinced. And we were talking about something completely separate, and we both witnessed the tap lift itself up and lean to the left. Now, she instantly blamed water pressure, but in the 12 years living there, that never happened before nor since. I was over the moon. This was evidence. This was evidence there was something there all along. I was right. And that throne of victory which I sat on became very uncomfortable 5 minutes in when I realised if I am right, I'm acknowledging there is something that is both sentient and able to move anything in this apartment at will of its own volition. And I don't think there would have ever been a quicker 180 in regards to it's probably water pressure than me on that day. Because it's one thing going somewhere and experiencing the paranormal. When it's where you live, night and day, that could be so detrimental to your mental health that it's terrifying to think. But Anonymous, thank you for being our very first experiencer for Season 22 of The Dark Paranormal. Now don't forget, guys, we are a fluid show. And by that we mean, yes, every episode for Season 22 is taken up. But if the right experience lands in our email box, it will end up on this season. Because if I receive an amazing story, I'm like a child. I can't hold my own water. I need to tell someone about it. And who better to tell than fellow enthusiasts of the paranormal? And of course, with our spin-off shows like Dark Minisodes, Dark Realms, Dark Bites for our Patreons, irrelevant of the length of your experience, we no longer care. We did way back in the early seasons because we were trying to make sure we had enough episodes per season. Now we are genuinely, especially over at Patreon, building a catalogue of experiences that is an exceptionally exciting place to be as a paranormal enthusiast. And don't forget, if you want to get a free week at the highest tier, and go and check what I'm talking about whilst it's at the lower price, head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. And to get your experiences to us, either click the link again in the show notes or go direct to thedarkparanormal.com and then click on Submit My Experience. But welcome back, and next week when everyone looks away from the paranormal, a certain group of eyes will be looking back into it, as we do each and every week. because January to December is our paranormal season. And I can't wait to speak to you all again for our second episode of Season 22. Now that's three twos. I hope no one times that by three. But until next week, stay safe, take care, and remember, when you're discussing the paranormal, always try to keep some of your disbelief at the door. And I'll see you next time, right here, on The Dark Paranormal.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.